Okay, we got everybody. Okay, we're going to go ahead and start back up here. Now, we were coming back around to love. The God type of love, again, is what's required in order for people to be married and have the dream marriage. I do not know of any way in my studies or in my limited history of how people can have that fairy tale marriage, the feeling that the fairy tale marriage provides without walking in agape love. Now, we want to talk about the word love here a little bit more. There's four words I put up. Four Greek words primarily are translated as one English word in the New Testament, love. You read through the King James, it's going to say love, 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 love. But in Greek, it said agape, phileo, storge, eros. Now, words have meanings. They convey a message. If we use one word and another language use four words, guess what we miss? We misunderstand. We miss the understanding, because I'm like, well, if black is white and white is yellow, but in English, they all, it was a color. I don't understand. It was a color. Yeah, but what color was it? It was a color, because we only have a word, a color. We don't have a word. That's what happens with love. The Bible talks about love, and everywhere we read it, we think it's all the same, and we have a hodgepodge of meaning. Now, in the New Testament, you have the four words, agape, phileo, storge, and eros, which were all translated as love. Now, phileo is a brotherly love or friendship love. Phileo. It's a brotherly love or friendship love. That love says, I see something in you that pleases me. People who got married on phileo, they saw something in that person that pleased them. Boy, I tell you, she is just so smart. I've always liked a smart girl. So I was like, she's so smart. I saw that in Helen. She is so smart. I like that. She's got good grades. She was, wow, look, she's class valedictorian. I like that. Not that I had to marry someone who was class valedictorian, but I liked that. I saw something in her I liked. That was a phileo love. I love you because I see something in you that I like. There's a brotherly love there. You know, the city Philadelphia is from the word philo, which means love. Philadelphia, brotherly love. The city of brotherly love is what they call it. It's what phileo means. You have the word storge. Storge is an affectionate love. It says, I love dogs. I love children. It's affectionate. Generally, that affection you feel is, hey, I feel a certain way about myself around you. I feel so nice when I hold a cuddly puppy. That's storge. That's different from phileo. The third type is eros, where we get the word erotic from, or erotica. That is a sensual love. And yes, you should marry your wife or your husband. Sensual love should be present. It's not the most important, but it is important. I always wonder about folks who don't marry somebody who rings their bell, somebody who makes their liver quiver. You know what I mean? You ought to marry a girl that she just does something for you. You ought to marry a guy who you just like something about him just gets you happy. You know what I mean? You should be physically attractive to your spouse or your prospective spouse. Eros should be a part of it, but eros is not the most important part. The most important part and the thing that's going to make a marriage last and the only thing that can go the long run is going to be the agape. Because all this other stuff is subject to float and change, to ebb and tide. If that's what you're married on, you're going to have a problem. Now, phileo, storge, and eros are usually the types of love that people base their marriage upon. Not agape. They base their marriage upon eros, phileo, or storge. We married because we saw something in our spouse that pleased us. Phileo. We felt affection towards them because of the way we felt around them. Storge. That's why we married them. He or she was so fine, they made our liver quiver. Eros. That's why we married them. That girl is fine, man. How could I not marry her? Look at that. You know? Or this guy, look at those muscles. He's a football. Oh, that's a good catch. Girl, you got a football captain or whatever. That ain't got nothing to do because he could be dumb as a stick. might abuse you. And, you know, not always, but there's a tendency for men to have that much testosterone to be abusive, too. Not saying they all are, because a lot of guys that do all that fine, because some of the head cheerleaders are dumb. But Helen was the head cheerleader. And she was also class valedictorian. I saw a lot in her I liked. So it's not always that way, but you can't just like the way they make you feel, storge, or see something in them you like, eros, or just be physically attracted. But probably all of us in here, if we really understand agape, we'll realize we didn't get married on agape. We got married on one or a combination of those three. Would you not agree? Or how many people say, no, I just married her 100% to give all I want to her, all of my life. I got married to serve her. I got married to serve him. I wasn't thinking nothing about it. I was just, I mean, I have those and those, but my main basis was agape. How many liars do we have? Okay, so everybody agrees with me. That's one way to get you to agree. Take out the opposition. But think about it. Now, I want you to understand this point, because if you really think in your mind, no, it was agape. All you got to do is look at your spouse and see if they are ecstatically happy all the time since you got married. If they're not, you're not agape-ing them all the time. You're not their answer to prayer all the time. You're not everything they believe God for and all they could ever hope for. They couldn't even dream anymore. See, because if you were agape, you are God personified in love. And how many of us are really that? So if you're not that and they're not that, you couldn't have got married on the basis of that. You got married on a combination of those that felt so good, you thought it was that. And that's what we do. We substitute the imitation for the real. Your spouse would never have a problem with you if you were perfect, would they? If they look at you and they just say, goodness. That person is always sweet. Person is always in a positive disposition. That person is always lovable. That person is always gentle, kind. That person is long-suffering with me. Person is always patient with me. Now, if you think I'm lying, let's look at this. Let's look at this definition of love again. 1 Corinthians 13 again. We're going to read verses 4 through 8. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8. Let's look there again, because see, technically, if you're saying you understand agape and that's why you married the person agape them, then you understand this. This is what you're doing. And if you married them to agape them, surely you're still agapeing them, right? You married them to love them. Surely you're still loving them. Let's see what it says here. It says in verse 4, 1 Corinthians 13, 4, that word charity here is love. It was charity in 1611 when this version of King James was written, but the word is love. Charity has connotation of giving. Love has connotation of giving. Love carries no connotation of taking. It carries only connotation of giving. That's why they called it charity then. Love suffereth long. Oh, you're so patient with that person. No matter how long it takes them to change or how many times you've asked him to fix that leaky sink, you're just patient with him. You never get upset with him because you're full of agape. No matter how much you tell her, baby, you know, I just need one white shirt ironed for this day or that day. You never say anything to her about it because you're just patient. You're long-suffering because you married them to agape them, right? Love suffereth long and is kind. Charity, love envieth not. Love vaunteth not itself. It's not puffed up. It does not behave itself unseemly. You're always just a perfect gentleman. She's always just a perfect, wonderful, lovely wife. Love rejoiceth not in iniquity. I'm sorry. Love does not behave itself unseemly. Verse 5. It seeketh not its own way. It's not easily provoked. It thinketh no evil. It does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. It beareth all things, believeth all things. It hopeth all things. It endureth all things. Love never fails. So if I'm walking in agape love, it's not going to fail. And I got married for agape love. Everything is wonderful. Everything's great. No, it's not like that. We probably did not marry, not because we didn't want to, but because nobody taught us. Some of the things I've already taught you, you might have had no idea of before you got married. Have you learned anything you had no idea of before you got married? Or did you know all this? It's all review for you. There's a few things that are new. I mean, did you know that there were four types of love? So that when you say you love your wife, which one you should have been talking about? Maybe you knew that. But then again, your wife said you thought you would know it all anyway. Your husband said you thought you would know it all. Maybe they were right. Did you know that men and women have converse sexual desires over the years? A lot of people don't know that. But these are things to help us understand so we can love. Now, let's make this a little clearer. I'm going to read it quickly and Amplified. Not going to spend too much time on it. You can read it at home, meditate it. And in the Amplified Bible, which is King James with more adjectives in it and amplifies the meaning, says in verse 4, love endures long and is patient. If you don't have Amplified, just listen carefully. Love endures long and it is patient and kind. Love never is envious, nor does it ever boil over with jealousy. Why are you coming home late? Why are you talking to that girl? Why are you always hanging around women? You know, how come you let that man come over? Don't have your old boyfriend calling you. Just going on, just jealous. Don't know what's going on. Love is never envious. Talk about agape love. When they say love here, they're talking about agape. They're not talking about eros, storge, or phileo. Agape love endures long and is patient and kind. Agape love never is envious nor boils over with jealousy. It is not boastful or vainglorious, which is proud. It does not display itself haughtily. It is not conceited, arrogant, and inflated with pride. It is not rude or unmannerly. It does not act unbecomingly. Love, that is God's agape love in us, does not insist on its own rights or its own way. That's a big one. It does not insist on its own rights. Now, did it say you had a right? Yes, you have the right, but agape love does not insist on its own rights and its own way. There's an attitude and assistance that's demanding. Love does not demand. You should never demand anything of your spouse. There are things you can expect, but you can't demand anything because they are an individual. You should not be able to look to your wife, like we said before, and say, I demand you have sex with me because I'm the man. Or look at him and say, I demand you go out and get a higher paying job. If he's making basically the money he was going to make when he married you and he hadn't changed, like, you know, was in med school, was going to be this Michael Vascular and be all this and have all this money. Then all of a sudden now he's out flipping burgers. Well, you got a problem. You lied to me. But if he was just doing whatever at the time, don't marry him, then try and make him be some, you know, president of McDonnell Douglas or something. You don't have the right to do that. That would be wrong. That'd be demanding your own way, not their way. Insisting on your own way. It says love, agape love. It does not demand its own way. It says, love, God's love in us does not insist on his own rights or his own way, for it is never self-seeking or not self-seeking. It doesn't seek just to please itself. It's not touchy or fretful or resentful. It takes no account of evil that's done to it. It pays no attention to a suffered wrong. That's a tough one. But do you know how much happier we'd be if we forget about when people wronged us instead of keeping score? So next time the fight comes up, look, now I wasn't going to say nothing. But 2 weeks ago, we're talking 14 days, 13 hours, 62 minutes and 8 seconds ago. I told you. Now, don't be trying to tell me when I told you that and you act like it was different. You're keeping score so that when the fight comes, you can pull out your scorecard and say, what about when you? That's hard. Because when you, it's hard, and when it's hard to stop doing that, you know you are a combative person and you want to make sure you have ammunition to win the battle with. But this is your wife. This is your husband. You're arraying yourself against them for the purpose of winning the battle. Marriage is not a battle. It's not a struggle of wills. God tells you how it ought to be. And the only struggle is your will lining up with the word or not lining up with the word. Your marriage would not work if you renegotiate something outside of God. God has basic things that he says how you ought to love, how you ought to treat people. And each of you should be individually trying to line your will up with that, not competing with the other person as though there's some corporation power struggle and who's going to get their way the most today. That's why you keep score, because you want ammunition. If you literally say, I'm not planning on doing battle with you, so I don't even remember that. I just put it out of my head. And when the thoughts come, you tell yourself, I can't use that. That's water under the bridge. I can't use that. Because the temptation is to use it. Now, who are you to say this to me when just the other day you, but Pastor, I'm going to lose all the battles if I can't bring that up. Because, you know, they be doing that to me. You know, they do that. They come back and they act like they ain't never done it before. And they ride me and they do it all the time. I need to be able to bring that up. You do if you're trying to win. Do you know that when you defeat your spouse, you still don't win? You still don't win. Think about it. You got a battle out there against the devil to fight. This is the only person you should be able to always count on to help you. This is your buddy. And if you shoot him, you won. How did you win? You always win working towards reconciliation. You never win on beating the person who's on your team. All you do is make it easier for the devil to destroy all of you, including your kids, when you all break up, get divorced, and go your own way. You just make it easier for the devil. You don't win to defeat your teammates. How can you possibly win? But if we don't have a mentality of team, of unity, but our mentality is, I'm a man and it's men against women, and you're a woman, so I'm against you, that's crazy. But people do it all the time. Or even more so, the battle of wills. It's going to be my way more than it's going to be your way, because I know that you see things different than I see them, and I know I see them different than you, but I got to be happy. So I'm going to fight for mine. If he's thinking the same thing, he's going to fight for his, and you got the problem. Here's something that Helen's brother had done, talking about love here. It says how to improve my love walk. He made a checklist, and he went through 1 Corinthians 13:4-8, and he put on here, how to improve my love walk. And you check off the things you're working on. I think he said he'd read it daily and work on it. It says love is patient. That means inconvenience without complaining. Love is kind. It shows gentleness, consideration, and helpfulness. Love does not envy. That means it doesn't feel resentful for another person's advantage. You know, some husbands and wives compete. Now, Helen has to be a strong woman to resist that temptation here, because I'm up front more than she is. Everybody here knows who Helen is because she does a lot up front, but I'm up front more than she is. And people are insensitive that will come up and they may talk to us and just ignore her if she's standing right next to me, because I just want to see the pastor. Want to talk to the pastor. Or if we go somewhere and somebody says, oh, Pastor Cook, I heard you're the best thing since sliced bread. Oh, that's great. I just love that. Oh, the word is so great. And she knows she makes almost as many sacrifices as I do, and in many areas make sacrifices I don't make. She's right there going through it. And when we sacrifice financially to be able to keep the church going and we couldn't do things we wanted to do financially, guess who was right there sacrificing with me? Helen. But I'll get all the glory and the praise from other people. So she has to be strong in order to resist the temptation to envy. Feel resentful for another person's advantage. I have the advantage where people may come and show me more appreciation. She may not have that advantage, but she could be resentful towards me, and that could get in our house. And you never know it, because you never know where it's at or what's going on. Just people be upset. You never know. But I thank God she's strong enough to resist that kind of thing. Say, love does not boast. Talk with excessive pride. Look what I did. Look what I built. Look at me. Stuff the guy say something like, look, I go to work and I bring my money home. See, that's excessive pride, because technically you say it's all your money. If you're going to say it's your money and she's going to say she's your housekeeper, then you got to give her part of her money that you say is yours, because she's doing part of what's keeping that household going. You don't win when you fight on salaries. Okay, I make $25,000, $30,000 a year, and then I got to give you $18,000 or $15,000 for what you do for me, watching my babies and doing my laundry and doing all that. Because technically, if you're going to be me, my, you got to divide it up. You got to pay everybody what they're worth. You don't win on that argument. But a lot of guys in the back of their head think it's their money. And a woman thinks it's her kids and her house. It's ours. Yours, mine, ours is ours. Love is not proud, overly convinced of one's own importance. Well, baby, you know, I am the one who, the reason we have stuff in this house is because of me. Because you just remember, you ain't got no job. Or if they both work, hey, baby, you know, I don't want to say nothing. I love you and all, you know, but I'm bringing in, you know, that 7,000, you bringing in 22. So, you know, it's like, I split it even though, don't I? So you just remember. See, that's the same thing as pride. Well, what does that mean that you make more money? Does it mean you're better? You're lucky she work at all. Your butt ought to get out there and make all of it if you start acting crazy. What's there to be proud about in that? But see, pride doesn't have to be rational because it's not rational. To be proud of what? Did you make more money? What does that mean? What does that have to do? You make more money. What does that make you more important? Make you more valuable? No. Doesn't mean anything. You just make more money. What difference does that make? Some parts of our marriage, Helen made more money than me. What difference does it make? The other parts of our marriage, I made more money than her. Right now, I make all the money coming in. But what difference does any of that make? We don't put any value on it. You just do what you do with the money. You bring it in, put it in the pot as everybody's money, and you do what you got to do to keep the family going. Nothing to be proud over. Love is not rude. I mean, lack good manners. I mean, if your wife needs some help, hold the door. And I'm like you, man. I'm talking to you as much as me. I got to remind myself of all these things. That's why faith comes by hearing and hearing and hearing and hearing and hearing. That's why you got to go to a good church where you can hear it and hear it and hear it, because it's so easy to forget it, because there's so many voices out there saying do the opposite. That we got somebody, we got to get somewhere where we can hear the voice of God telling us what we really should do to make it work. Don't be unmannerly to your wife. Don't embarrass her in public. Don't make those old jokes like, you know, the guy at the airport was getting, the guy come and say, sir, could I get your bags? He said, no, she can walk. There's some guys that do that stuff on a regular basis. Wife jokes. If you're going to make a wife joke, you better make it about somebody else's wife. But you be afraid to do that, you get your teeth knocked out. But your wife's not big enough to knock your teeth out. But that's not honoring and respecting her as unto the weaker vessel. It's not honoring her. See, that's breaking the laws of God. The rules of God of how we can have a tremendous marriage are all there. They're all there. Love is not self-seeking. Concern only with yourself. What about me? What do I get instead of what can I give? As a man of the household, how much can I bless my family? How much can I do for my family? And then wife, as a woman of the household, how much can I do for my family? How much can I put in? How nice can I be to my husband? We need to be fighting a battle over who's going to outdo somebody on blessing them than fighting a battle on who's going to try and grab as much blessing as possible from the other person. We're fighting on the wrong side. We should be fighting to give. No, let me give to you. No, you gave to me last time. It's my turn to give to you. Let me give to you. Oh, you can't outgive me. You trying to outdo me. I'm going to get you next week. There are some people who have come into that where they just bless each other. They just bless. I mean, it normally take them a while to get there because they have to develop and they got to get over some carnal behavior. Because most people still feel cheated. Well, if I'm giving more than they gave me, I can't do that because, see, that ain't even fair. What do you mean fair? Fair has got nothing to do with it. You stood up there and vowed to love them. Got nothing to do with fair. Fair would have been for you to stay single. There's a cost to everything. And if you want to be with a wife and have kids and have a husband and have all that, you got to have it all. If you want to be have it happily, you got to go with the package. God said something for folks who stay single. He said, Paul said, I would that y'all remain like me. He was single. He said, because a married man doth mind the things that please his wife. And a married woman doth mind the things that please her husband. But the single person is free to mind only that which pleases God. And that's true, because when you get married, you give up something. Some, you might go to a seminar like this and you might have to, you know, depending on how your relationship is, you might want to go buy the tapes after it's over. We're taping. You might want to buy the tapes. We say, well, I got to call my wife and see, get permission to get that out of the budget because we didn't budget for that. Well, you should do that. I mean, if that's the way your finances set up, if you just got extra money, it's not a problem. If you buy it out of your personal income or whatever, that's fine. But sometimes when you get married, very often marriage, the fact that somebody else is there, you have to consider. Can't come home with a car when you're married. I just thought I'd get a new car, honey. They had a good deal, so I came home with a new car. You can't do nothing like that when you're married. You know, not unless you're making millions of dollars, where it's really infinitesimally small and it's not costing the other person anything. But if it's costing them something, you need to consult with them. That is rude. That's self-seeking. Well, I wanted one. Well, suppose she come home tomorrow with one. And now you can't afford two. What happens then? You can't live like that. Maybe if you buy them from the same company, you'll be able to save a little on the towing fee when they repossess them. Come and get two for one. You can't live like that. Love is not easily angered. That means cause to show of strong feelings of hostility. That one hits women a little bit harder. Now, men get angry. Don't get me wrong, because men show that anger. But sometimes those feelings, the men will get angry and act craziness. And then the women, those feelings, I mean, you cannot let, something Joyce Meyer says very good. She says, women, don't let your feelings destroy your marriage. A lot of people don't think of it like that. But your feelings, that's why God said we walk by faith, not by feelings. And it also says we walk by faith, not by thinking. Men, for the logical end, but I think it ought to be that way. Don't walk by thinking, walk by the word of God. You ain't got to think about it. Look at it, read it, and do it. You ain't got to feel, well, I don't feel like that's the right thing to do. Ain't got nothing to do with feeling. Look at it, read it, and do it. You'll be blessed. God said, I've done all the thinking, all the feeling need to be done. Now you just do it, and then you will feel good, and you'll think that was a good idea. Taste of the Lord, sees he's good. Trust in the Lord with all thy heart. Don't lean on your own understanding. In all thy ways, acknowledge him, and he shall make straight your path to success.
Meditate the word day and night. Do according to all that is written within it. Then you shall have good success and you shall make your way prosperous. That's the issue. What does the word have to say? Do it. If the word says this is what to make my marriage happy and you want to make your marriage happy, the issue is, do you trust God or do you trust you and TV and that more? Because at first your carnal mind will say, I don't think that's going to make me happy. I mean, I'm going to be giving to her and doing, being real nice, and but she be tripping sometime. And I can't. Well, you don't know how he treats me. But you, that's why I hear in counseling. You don't know how he acts. You don't know. I say, I ain't got to know how he acts. All I got to know is how God acts and responds to you following God. And God says, I give you peace, I give you joy, and I give you happiness, and you will be satisfied. And if you keep sowing love into him, you'll reap love out of him. Or they'll say, you remind me too much of God, and I'm a sinner and a happy sinner, so I'm getting the heck out of here. Either way, your problem will be solved. But it's so easy to project our own inefficiencies into other people. You are my problem. Nobody is your problem. Nobody. Except you. It's the man in the mirror, the woman in the mirror. No, but you don't understand what they've done. That doesn't have to steal your joy. Now, I tell people, and I tell women, so they don't misunderstand me, if he's abusing you and beating you in your head and you can't take that, yeah, you may need to get out of there. I understand that. But I'm talking about in the sense of when he's emotionally abusing me. I said, nobody can emotionally abuse you, because you know what that is? That's an adult way for saying, he said something to hurt my feelings a lot. That's what that means, emotionally abuse. You ain't say nobody touch you. He's emotionally abusing me. He's saying things I don't like. And he says them a lot. And I don't like it. And that's abuse. What'd your mother tell you? Sticks and stones may break your bones, but words may never hurt you. They don't have to hurt you. I know words have power and they can hurt, but they don't have to hurt you. You should look at that person and say, hey, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way, but I disagree with that. So, you know, if you say it, that's fine, but you don't have to believe everything everybody says. And husbands, wives, you do need to be careful, because your words do carry power and they are very hurtful to people. Ultimately, between a person and God, they should get their self-sufficiency from God. If God says I'm the righteous of God in Christ Jesus, God says I'm smart, and you say I'm dumb and I'm stupid, that's not a nice thing to say to your husband or your wife. But the thing is if you stay with God, you'll still be all right, even though they say that. People should be nice. People shouldn't be cruel. But realize you have a God that's much stronger than the words your husband or your wife can say to you. If you have the mind of Christ and you dwell on the word of God, nobody can emotionally abuse you. Physical abuse, yes, because men are stronger than women. Some women are stronger than men, but for the most part, men are stronger than women. And if you have physical abuse, you got to get out of that environment. That can be bad. You got to get some help, talk to that person, whatever, or get out of there. But when it comes to emotional abuse, that's something you don't have to deal with, because that just sums up to they do stuff I don't like and they do it a whole lot and it hurts my feelings. You don't have to get a feeling. The way I look at him, I say, when people do things that are sin, and I have to remind myself of this too, because you love somebody and you let your guard down, and that's when they hurt you. And you need to be able to let your guard down to your husband or spouse, but husband or wife. But you want to be able to say, look, this person, obviously there's something going on that they're like this, because they're normally not like that. Let me pray in a certain area that God will help them and give them wisdom. In other words, you respond to what will help them. Don't respond to what will hurt them. Because they hurt you, don't return railing for railing and evil for evil. I mean, it's got to be, because if you know that's not that person's nature, there's got to be something going on. Or if you find out you marry them, there's something going on in the background and you want to love them, pray for them. God, help them to understand what it is to bother them. Help me. Help me to get them help, Father, to bless, because I love them, I care about them, and all I know is somewhere Satan has their mind captive. Somewhere they're thinking the wrong thoughts, God, and I'm not going to give up on them. Lord, I love them. I want you to be a blessing to them. I want you to encourage them. Help me to be a blessing to them, God. You can work towards being a blessing to that person, or you can throw them aside like trash and say, I'm going to go get another one. Not if you vow to love them. Love never fails. Love keeps no record of wrongs. That's bad or unjust treatment. Love just refuses to acknowledge it. Yes, it happened, but it's off grounds. We can't talk about it. We cannot talk about what happened yesterday or before that. Oh, man, but that's hard. You have to leave it alone. Love does not delight in evil, that which is morally bad or wrong. When you're doing something that's bad or wrong, you know, the wife says, honey, you know, don't cheat on the taxes. Well, baby, you know, everybody's doing it. Ain't cheating. They owe me back anyway. Don't do that. Don't put your wife or your husband in that situation. If they have the right conscience to do things above board, listen to them. That's something you can't flow with. Now, he's the man. If he ultimately going to do it, then, you know, he's got authority in the area as long as it's not obviously illegal. Just leave him alone. It may be unwise, not the best thing to do, but just leave him alone because he's got authority in the area. But if it is obviously illegal, you tell him, look, you can't be doing that. You know, that is illegal and immoral. I can't go along with that. I can't go along with that. That's a serious problem. Like, he's going to go out and rob somebody and let you know about it. I say, look, I'm going to have to go turn you in. I'm not going to be an accessory to the crime. I'm not going to be an accomplice. And God says, follow the laws of the land. You remember, God was first. Obey the laws of the land. I ain't trying to be. I mean, if it's one of these issues where it's a gray area and it's a loophole, let him go ahead and do what he's going to do, because you ain't going to go to jail for it. No way. But when it comes to this stuff that's obviously against God, you know, you just got to say, look, you know, I'm telling you, I love you. And that's why I would tell on you. I said, I don't want to hear nothing about it. I would tell on you. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's love. They may not like it, but that's love. Love always protects. It supports against arguments, attacks, and criticism. Love always protects. Love protects the relationship. Love protects the peace. Love protects the harmony. Love is willing to be done wrong that there may still be peace. Love always trusts. It believes in the responsibilities and reliabilities of the other person. I trust my husband. I trust my wife. If I have no reason to distrust them, watching Lifetime TV is not a reason to distrust them, because this girl, this happened to this girl on TV. That's no reason to distrust my husband. Love always hopes. It believes what it wants to happen. I believe that my marriage will improve. I believe that we can fix this. I believe that this can be what both of us dreamt of it being. Love always preserves. It continues in spite of difficulty and opposition. Love always perseveres. It continues in spite of difficulty and opposition. It's tough. It's rough, but we're going to read the books. We're going to go to the counseling class. We're going to do whatever we need to do to make this work, because I love our relationship and I love you. We are going to make it work. We're not going to quit. We're not going to give up. I can have all that I want in this relationship, but we got to have some changes, but let's work on it together. Love never fails. He put in here, Helen's brother put these excerpts in here. Love never fails. It never leaves or abandons. It never fails. It never leaves or abandons. Not love. When you can walk away that easy, you never had love. You only had eros. And something happened that you weren't motivated by him anymore. Or you had storge. You were in love with being in love. Some people like that. A lot of people get a lot of people do that when they date. I had friends to do that. They love the excitement of the newness. Meet the person, go out. They impress the person with everything, show them everything, take them all the hot spots they know they're going to love. The person's so excited, infatuated. Then after they've shown them all, they can show them and they have to settle down to start building a relationship. Excitement's gone. It's not working between us. They go get somebody else. They were in love with being in love. Some people are in love with the wedding, in love with the newness of the relationship. 5 years go by, they want to do it again. It ain't like I thought it was going to be. You changed. They want to drop out. Phileo. You know, one thing, it's just, you know, we were in college and we used to be in class together. And oh, just the way you'd answer those questions, you were sharp, you were this, you were that. And then you find out if you married him, like, he's just dull. You know, you go home and he don't do none of that anymore. He gave all that up. He was just doing it in school because he was a good student. But now he just won't read a book, won't do anything. Well, if that's what made you love him, or that he was the football captain and you liked being the girlfriend of the football captain, and now high school is over. Maybe he didn't do well in school, and now he goes from the top of your social circle to the bottom. Some of the other guys gone off to college, they're going forward in life, and you married to this guy, and he's flipping burgers. Not saying there's nothing wrong with that, but you were expecting more than that. You were expecting something different. Now he's just flipping burgers, so now you don't love him anymore. So you want to get out. If you don't use this, you're going to want to run, because all those other ones are going to change. The God type of love would keep you together. We're going to go ahead and take a break for lunch. You can stop the tape.